Deputy Fuhrer is an authority on the genetics of racial purity. How would you classify this one?
Very difficult. Note the sinister eyes and the malformed ears. Definitely an inferior race.
History's strange, it's alien, and it won't give us what we would like to have.
If it's the 8 o'clock hour of a Tuesday, and it is Tuesday, March the 12th of 2024, it's Dave Does History on Bill Mick Live. Dave Bowman, who's been with us throughout the show, now going to take us on our own little trek into history and taking a look at something kind of an ugly side of history, Dave, and it's interesting that we're going here. Nice to have you along for the Tuesday conversation on Bill Mick Live. Headline at BillMick.com, a disturbance in the force that consumed our first 2 hours of the show. But now we're going back to Dave and Dave Does History. What are you thinking this morning, David?
It's a dark side of history, and we don't like to think about it. When we do think about it, we tend to think about it in terms of other places. When you start talking about eugenics and the idea of racial purity, our minds go to one place that we just automatically assume. But what we forget is these ideas had much deeper influence than we want to admit, and in some ways surprising. You mentioned in your news story, in fact, I think it was your very first news story this morning, about the South Florida congresswoman addressing the ongoing
Haitian crisis. Everything going on in Haiti, yeah.
The last sentence of that news story said these words: the congresswoman is planning to work on a resolution this week to secure more funding, listen to this, aimed at preventing the violence from spilling into the United States, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to keep that sentence in mind as we journal through this whole situation. Now, again, why did I pick this topic? March 11th is the birthday of a guy by the name of Harry Laughlin. He's a guy you've probably never heard of. He's a guy we've been trying to forget about ever since, well, the 1930s. Harry Laughlin was highly influential. He was a person who believed very firmly that the best plan for the United States of America was to create a racially pure, constantly improving genetically society. And that didn't just mean necessarily in terms of race, but it meant in terms of economic value and intelligence and those sorts of things as well. You'll be surprised to learn that many of the minority leaders of that time, people like W.E.B. Du Bois, actually agreed with him and thought this was a great idea to kind of eugenically, genetically purify America, making sure that we were stronger, better, and paving the streets, I guess, for a guy by the name of Khan, who would go on to cause so much havoc in Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes
it was a great movie too.
We don't give the writers of Star Trek credit enough. They understood these things, and it wasn't that long ago that this was not all that uncommon. Moreover, even the Supreme Court of the United States would weigh in on this idea, and you might be surprised at the way it went.
We pick it up in 30 seconds. This is Bill Mick Live. Dave Does History on Bill Mick Live. Dave, this whole idea of eugenics seems to be against the founding words of the country that all men are created equal.
Certainly does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And
the Supreme Court buys into it in some respect.
Not only does the Supreme Court buy into this, Bill, but laws will be passed in the United States of America. Did you hear that? The United States of America, 35 American states will pass laws that will allow those states to, quote unquote, sterilize people that state considers to be feeble-minded. And one of those states will actually go out of its way to make sure that their law gets before the Supreme Court of the United States. They want it before the Supreme Court of the United States. so that they can confirm that this is fine and dandy. And the Supreme Court of the United States will not only uphold this law, but this law will not actually be repealed until 1974.
Wow.
And there are cases that extend into the 2000s where states continued to do this, sterilizing people against their will because of the ideas of a guy by the name, of Harry Laughlin, born this week in the 1800s. This idea of eugenics, is a strange concept, but it's one that we're all familiar with through primarily dystopian science fiction. And it's, generally speaking, it was born out of the ideas of Sir Francis Galton, who was an Englishman, who was a cousin of Charles Darwin. And it was part of the development of what would be called social Darwinism. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time on political ideology here, but social Darwinism was the extension of the theories of Darwin into the political realm, survival of the fittest being the prime one. There was this idea of heredity and superior traits, that by producing superior people, society would get better. This came with positive and negative eugenics, and the positives should be obvious. We're trying to make stronger, smarter, better looking people. But the negative side of that was to discourage or prevent people deemed genetically inferior from reproducing, preventing that from happening. We had some mathematical, say, the meritocracy. Galton had proposed that social and economic status should reflect natural abilities and genetic qualities of individuals, which is a sort of a form of meritocracy based on genetic traits, not actual accomplishments. Remember the movie Gattaca? Didn't matter how good you were at something. If you didn't have the right genetic code, you were out, even if you were the best at it. And of course, this was put into place on social policies through, like I said, social Darwinism, this idea that we need to control these things. And in the United States, this became a very populist idea. We need to get better. We need to get, as a society, we need to be evolving forward. We need to be stronger, faster, better, more intelligent, because the world by the late 19th century is changing. And everyone can see that the future is going to be much better and much different. And so we've got to be ready for this. And part of the problem that we're having here is that, well, we just have too many stupid people. Stupid people are reproducing at a higher rate than smarter people are. I'm not making this up. This is what they came to believe. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to point any fingers or name any names, Bill, but certain areas of the country were seen as particularly, shall we say, not up to snuff when it came to intelligence.
Did it have to do with their accent?
Yeah, I'm not pointing any fingers or naming any names, but it rhymes with West Virginia. So there was this tendency to look at that. And there was this element of attractiveness. And even in the NAACP leadership, there was support for this idea, because if we produced better African Americans for the future, they would have a better way of integrating into American society if they were smarter, better looking. Again, this isn't stuff that we like to talk about. It's because, again, our minds immediately go somewhere else when we start talking about eugenics and creating a superior race. Our minds go to one place and one place only. But this was in the 1890s and into the early 1900s in the United States, when laws began to start getting passed, when limits were seen. One of the concerns that the Americans had in that era was the arrival of people who were not up to standards. And so at Ellis Island, we put in place a test which was designed to test the intelligence of people coming into the country, immigrants. Of course, we wrote the test in English, and we didn't have laws that said, you know, you had to make it available in Polish, Czechoslovakian, German, Slavic language. And so naturally, the immigrant had a less than stellar chance of passing this test for intelligence and would thus be classified, and this is where the term actually comes from, as a moron. And since they were classified as a moron, they were seen as quote-unquote undesirable, feeble-minded. We didn't like that. We didn't want these people, what was the term she used? Oh, yeah, spilling over into the United States. And this led to laws restricting immigration. We don't want these people coming here because they're not smart enough to pass our intelligence test, which, of course, is in English, not in the native language. So we really don't actually know whether they're intelligent or not. We can see if they're good looking or not, but there you go. It led to a lot of blowback from the United States attempting to establish itself as a, well, for lack of better terminology, racially pure and mentally pure society, which, again, in the context of social Darwinism might make sense, but in the terms of the Constitution, all men are created, or sorry, the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, it kind of flies in the face of what we say we believe. So, which is it? And along comes this guy, Harry Laughlin, who will become the leading advocate, one of the leading advocates for eugenics in the United States in the first 30 years of the 20th century.
Wow. We continue with that in moments here on Bill Mick Live. Good to have you along. You miss anything we do all day, the podcast is there for you at BillMick.com and the Bill Mick Live iHeartRadio channel. You never know when one of those things is going to lead to a couple of hours of discussion on this show as it did this morning. We pick up Dave Does History when we continue on 92.7 FM WMMB.
Weekly dive into history. Dave Bowman joins us on Bill Mick Live.
We'll take your calls on our final segment. Right now, we are in the middle of digging into eugenics and the United States history with it. Dave, you're telling us about Harry Laughlin. Tell us where we're going here, sir.
So Harry Laughlin is born in 1880, and he will become, this week in 1880, he will become really not the most notable face when it comes to eugenics, but he becomes probably the most influential person in the United States in pushing this advocacy for this idea of eugenics, which again goes back to primarily racial purity in the United States of America. These are terms that we don't like to hear. And again, one of the things that isn't discussed a lot about this concept of purity in the United States is that even the NAACP was on board with this in the early part of the 20th century, because as W.E.B. Du Bois said, it's a way to get better integrated in American society. That's how influential this guy was. He advocated, as I said, for those elements that Galton had put out there, hereditary and superior traits, negative eugenics, keeping people that were, frankly, ugly and stupid from reproducing. And this would lead to laws eventually in 35 American states that allowed the state, pick a state, one of those 35, Virginia is the main one, to actually decide. The state. You, we were talking last hour, Bill, about these politicians that get to decide things.
Yeah.
The politicians, the state, gets to decide whether you're feeble-minded and should be allowed to reproduce or not.
Was there any, and I hate to use the word because in this conversation, I don't think there is, reasonable criteria? What were they
defining reasonable? I mean, well, yeah. Again, we're dealing with social Darwinism here. So if you weren't up to their standards, whatever the standards that particular state pushed, then sure. And many,
I guess I'm asking, what standards were they using? I mean, how did they develop?
Well, that's in the words of a Supreme Court justice, they're imbeciles. Now, a lot of this had to do with whether they were drags on society or not. A lot of this had to do with, you know, you look at somebody and you go, well, that person is a drain on society. We have to pay them to support them. We have to pay to.
Well, they're eating up social services.
Right. They're eating up, which didn't really exist in that time frame, not like they do today. But if someone isn't contributing to society, then they're a drain on society. We should not allow them to reproduce. This is kind of the way Virginia looked at this. Laughlin would go on to found something called the Eugenics Records Office. Now, you think the questions that the Census Bureau is asking are invasive? Wait till you get a questionnaire in the mail from the Eugenics Records Office, which, by the way, you didn't have to fill out. You didn't have to send it in. But you will not be surprised to learn that many Americans did anyway.
Because they felt they were the superior of the species.
And they knew that the goal of the Eugenics Records Office, as headed by Harry Laughlin, was to purify American society. To keep...
So he was appointed to this position by some government body?
He founded. He actually founded this, the Eugenics Records Office. But Congress looked at what he was doing and went, you know what, we need an expert on these issues before we start passing these laws. So they brought him in as an expert witness and a member of their committee on eugenics.
Wow.
Where he began to testify before Congress about the importance of eugenics. And this, of course, would lead to more eugenic influence.
And that's straight ahead, 30 seconds away on Bill Mick Live. Dave does history on Bill Mick Live, looking at Harry Laughlin, eugenics, the Eugenics Records Office, Dave, and all this influence he had. What threw him to prominence here?
Well, again, he ends up in front of Congress. Congress is debating a law in 1924 called the Johnson-Reed Immigration Act of 1924. And based on Laughlin's quote-unquote extensive statistical testimony, unquote, Congress learns that there is, quote, excessive insanity among immigrants from Southern Europe and Eastern Europe. He argues that Jews are feeble-minded, and he eventually is appointed as the expert eugenics agents to the Committee on Immigration and Naturalization. This also, by the way, applies to Italians and Russians, but of course the biggest part of the 1924 Act is Asians. The Asian Exclusion Act is almost what it's called. And so there's this attempt to limit immigration to the United States even more so than has already been done. We are going to keep immigrants out because of their quote unquote excessive insanity. And at the same time, here in the old United States, we're going to start compulsory sterilization of people that are quote unquote feeble-minded and not up to our standards. This leads to the development of something called scientific racism, which is every bit as bad as it sounds.
Yeah, it does.
Now, this is 1924. What else is going on in the world in 1924? Anybody? Bueller? What's happening in Europe in 1924? Anybody remember? This dude, who is a former soldier in the German army, the Imperial Army, has sat in a prison because he tried to foment a revolution, and he has written a book in which he describes and defines his beliefs about racial purity, eugenic superiority, the master race, as it were, and he has begun his ascent. Now, he's not there yet, but he has begun to spread his ideas around Bavaria about how these are such great ideas. If they weren't such great ideas, it is kind of a paraphrase of what he says. If these weren't such great ideas, would the Americans be doing this?
Ooh.
That's an uncomfortable part of our history that we don't like to think about at all. We get hyper about this. Ultimately, 35 states are going to pass these laws, and they are going to find their way to the United States Supreme Court, where Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, in the case of Buck versus Virginia, will write these words upholding these sterilization laws. Quote, three generations of imbeciles is enough, unquote. Speaking of the woman in the case, her daughter and her mother, all of whom were drains on society. The Supreme Court upholds these sterilization laws for eugenics, upholds this idea, and sends it on its way back to the states as this is just fine. Virginia will not actually repeal this law until 1974, which surprises people. Mm-hmm. And well into the 2000s, there are cases in California of forced sterilization based on the laws still on the books about people being drains on society and feeble-minded.
What's that happening to in California? We got about 45 seconds here.
It's insane that these laws were still on the books and still being used, but upheld by the Supreme Court. So what is it that kills?
Where hospitals or in California
prisons. So what is it that kills the idea of eugenics in the United States of America? You might think you know the answer because it seems pretty obvious. Old funny face over there in Bavaria, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not.
Not that, huh? We find out as we jump into our last segment of Bill Mick Live and Dave Does History for this Tuesday. 321-768-1240 if you want in on the topic. When we get to calls as we close our day in our next segment of Bill Mick Live on WMMB.
No time like the present. Call Bill now at 321-768-1240.
We'll get to those calls as we conclude Dave Does History for this Tuesday, taking a look at eugenics in the United States and Hitler citing the U.S. as it can't be bad. They're doing it. Take a look. Holy cow, Dave.
It's a little surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's good to know that Mr. Laughlin and his wife decided not to have children because there you go.
Somehow appropriate here, huh?
And in the end, he was actually forced to retire in 1939 after he had a series of severe seizures, which may have been due to hereditary epilepsy.
All kinds of irony on this one, isn't it?
Which actually kind of works out, I suppose, in the big scheme of things. It really speaks, I guess, in an era when we're looking at many of the same kind of arguments, the same kind of problems, the same kind of issues, the same kind of arguments, Bill. These people are a drain on society, therefore we must sterilize them and keep them from, you know, reproducing. It finds its echoes in some of the arguments in favor of abortion, doesn't it? These people will be a drain on society. And so social Darwinism is alive and well. Nobody was really speaking out against these ideas back in the 30s. And it really isn't until the Great Depression that Americans begin to realize, because of the obviousness in front of them, that this whole idea of eugenics is stupid. Because the idea, of course, is that if you are smart and good looking and all these kinds of things, you will not be a failure in life. But by the time the bread lines are out there, you got two people standing next to each other in bread lines, and really, how do you tell the difference?
Yeah.
And in fact, one of them might be a Harvard MBA and the other one might not be. He might be a hobo, but how do you tell? And people are starting to realize that this doesn't really work. And so while 35 states have these laws about forced sterilization, most of them are not really enforced, except in crazy places like Virginia and California, where, you know, that's where it's at. It's in the post-World War II era, as the full extent of what Hitler and the Nazis did becomes obvious, even Star Trek begins to take hot shots at these ideas of eugenics, not only in the episode Space Seed, but in the episode Patterns of Force. There are references to the how bad of an idea this really was. And yet it continues on. Nobody really wants to think about it. And so, like I said, these laws are not done away with until well into the 70s, or even in the case of Oregon in 1983. Here in the state of Washington, the law is technically still on the books. And in 2018, as recently as 2018, there was a debate about whether or not we here in the state of Washington should make it easier for the state to sterilize people who have disabilities, as opposed to having to go through the process with their guardians and making sure their guardians are on board with this. So these arguments have not gone away. The influence of social Darwinism and eugenics have not, and Harry Laughlin, have not completely gone away. But boy, are they something that we want to ignore, because we just get uncomfortable talking about this, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And we pick it up and your calls ahead. 1 minute on WMMB. I'm not sure we'd ever thought these things survived as recently as they have in our history, Dave, that it's interesting to see.
Well, we're not surprised when ideas advocated by the National Socialist Party still continue to surface. But one of the things that just makes us really uncomfortable is how much of that was influenced by what was happening in America. Hitler at one point actually says, I don't know why you're upset about how we're treating the Jews. We're treating them just like the United States does.
Interesting. Let's get to the phones at 321-768-1240. John is in Melbourne. Hey, John, good morning. John, you there with us? Hello, there you are.
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
Hello, we there?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, just some effects of this. When they did turn back the laws on this stuff, they were putting them out into the streets. And they did have some social help to them, but they were incapable of helping them or taking advantage of it, and they became homeless. They did empty a lot of buildings at a local state hospital, and the emptying of those buildings led to the places that I worked at as juvenile placements in maximum security. But there was not only the sterilization, there were lobotomies, there were abortions, there was a whole slew of abuse that in the middle 70s they kicked them out in a comprehensive sweep to try and correct it, and created a significant homeless problem and also crime problem until they got on top of that.
So you're saying this was part of the emptying of the state mental hospitals back in that era?
Yes. What Dave was talking about trying to fix this in 74, they did some, things that did collateral damage to them even more after the fact that they got him out of that influence that was taking place in the state hospital.
Interesting, John. Thank you for sharing that. Dave, was that pretty much the situation in California as well that you were talking about earlier?
Well, in California, it was prisoners, female prisoners, who were being sterilized against their will, and in many cases, Bill, without their knowledge, which, again, if you have a law that says you can do that, okay, but is that law keeping with the spirit of the Constitution and Declaration of Independence? Now, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., the Supreme Court justice who upheld the Virginia law in the Buck case, he draws a very interesting comparison to this. He says that if American society is going to call on our best and brightest to sacrifice themselves, now remember, we had just come through World War I, why shouldn't we be able to say to the feeble-minded, the less able, that they too should make a sacrifice to benefit our society? And so that's how he justified sterilizing and lobotomizing and, you know, everything short of actually, you know, murdering people, although who knows how far that went, here in the United States. And again, it's a dark period of our time, and it comes back to, I guess my warning today is this guy, Harry Laughlin, was very influential. One guy who gets in front of Congress and convinces them, and there's no real record of anybody challenging him on any of this, which bothers me. Anytime you get a scientific idea with consensus, with nobody challenging it, we're going to look back in 100 years and go, that was kind of stupid.
How new were the ideas that he was presenting would be my question. Is it something they didn't feel they could challenge because they didn't have a knowledge base to challenge it on?
Again, all of this was born out of Darwin's work, which, you know, of course, in the mid 19th century. So it was relatively new. But it was also born out of this idea of the Gilded Era, this idea that we're moving forward. And so we have to be better. We have to produce better human beings because tomorrow is going to require that, which is almost verbatim what Khan Noonien Singh says in the original episode. We were made to be a better person, to create a better world.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I go back to Star Trek. Those people that wrote that were geniuses, man. They understood this stuff. And, you know, here we are 50 years later. We don't really grasp these concepts. And one of the things I think that Star Trek was trying to do was remind us of these things so that we wouldn't forget them. We need to not. Harry Laughlin has disappeared in history. He has just you can't really find anything about him, maybe a Wikipedia article here and there. But we don't talk about him at all. He's certainly not covered in any history classes. And yet, the ideas that he presented were so influential, not just in the United States of America. They resulted in the Immigration Act of 1924, which many of us would argue led to the Second World War in the Pacific because of our relationship with Japan. I mean, these are problems that we, you know, cause and effect that aren't necessarily covered. And of course, those ideas spread to other places where they were implemented with much more devastating effects. And he's just sort of skated out of it.
Does part of this, and as you were just saying that about leading us into conflict and the like, is part of that because the people who meet to make the laws, craft the budgets, manage our government are not forward thinking enough to think of the implications of the actions that they take.
Well, in this particular case, they thought that they were forward thinking. We're right on the cutting edge of science. We're right on the cutting edge of societal development and evolution. We're moving forward. If anybody did bother to question it, how do you think they were treated? How are people today treated who question any of the scientific consensus that we're given? Say global warming. How are they treated if they question it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if your premise can't withstand scrutiny, then there's a problem with the premise in the first place.
But if you don't allow that scrutiny, then you go along with it. And that is social Darwinism in its effect. And that idea hasn't gone away. We've just changed the argument. Like I said, the argument for abortion many times is, if I don't abort this child, is there going to be a drain on society? That's right out of Laughlin. It may be a different subject, and it might be a different way. We're not sterilizing, we're aborting, but it's the same argument. And the lack of discussion about the significance of things is problematic to me. And it's, I guess that's the lesson. You see these people that get up there and become very famous and very Fauci-esque about how how much they're the expert and how stupid everybody else is.
Uh-huh.
And more often than not, history will tell you that they turn out to be some of the most evil people in history. And I would put Laughlin and his spiritual godfather, Galton, in that same vein.
Just got a text from Representative Tyler Steroy, who will be with us Friday in our 8 o'clock hour, by the way. You know, they just passed House Bill 3, which was the revised House Bill 1. He said, in 100 years, we're going to learn the same thing about social media. Interesting thought. And I don't think he's wrong that we'll see what the impact of this was on society, but it's got to take a long-term view.
You know, there's an old story about men, I think it's in India, might have been Iraq, I don't remember, where they had to debate laws twice, once sober and once drunk. And if it made sense both ways, then you would pass it.
That's interesting.
I'm all in favor of that. I think we should start doing that because Laughlin would have never survived drunk.
Yeah. Dave Bowman, it's been a fun hour. It's been a fun day. Thank you for joining me for all of it. And go enjoy your rainy day there in Washington State, will you?
Yeah, I got my slickers ready to go.